Whoa, whoa. Hey, how's it going, Crime Stoppers? Daniel Markham here. As you can see, I'm like way up here looking down on you guys now. I don't know if I told you last week I had to rebuild my notebook computer, and as part of that, I'm still kind of working out some bugs here. So, this is Nerd Roundup. Nerd Roundup is once a week we sit down and talk about nerd articles of the week, and the idea is just to kick around some ideas and have fun. Hopefully nothing useful will happen today and you won't learn anything. But if you learn just to have fun with nerd news and not take things too seriously, then we've won here. I just for the extra nerdy people around you, the problem I had looks like my NDI adapter to HDMI adapter was multicasting over the network and spewing out a bunch of packets. Turns out you can either unicast or multicast from these devices. You pick the wrong one, you actually end up for spamming the rest of your network gear. But all fixed now. Let's go to the nerd news. There's nobody here, which is kind of weird. I had what a couple weeks ago, I was kind of afraid we'd have too many people. I have 4 or 5 people on the nerd list, and I was like, golly gee, guys, I don't know if I can do 4 or 5. It's a lot. I don't want to do like a Brady Bunch thing, right? Here's just it's just no, I don't want to do Brady Bunch. So I told him I was afraid of, having too many people, and then dang, everybody kind of disappeared. But that's the way it is. That's why I set these things up at a regular schedule, because when you're professional, schedules are impossible. And instead of trying to chase around everybody and find an hour once a week, I just picked a time. And if you can make it, fine. If you can't make it, that's cool too. I think one or two people said they may stop by in the middle of the meeting. If they do, cool. Let's see what we got here. Okay, so first story is longitudinal analysis of blood markers reveals progressive loss of resilience. So this is really cool because what they're doing here is they're doing sort of a meta-analysis of various blood markers that may indicate that you're getting old, that you're senescence, that you're getting close to dying. And my feeling about this whole kind of nerdy area, and this is just totally uninformed BS opinion, is that we're getting within a decade or so of something interesting happening with old people research and preventing aging from happening. I guess for 10 or 15 years now, we've had quite a few efforts that have started treating aging as a disease, and that's going to go somewhere. I don't know if it's going to give us the answers we want. I'm not sure that actually we're going to make any progress on this thing, but I think we're going to end up in a very, very different spot next 5 to 10 years. I'm seeing some really interesting research going on in this area, so it's bears watching. Next up, okay. So this guy gets a piracy notice saying, "Hey, dude, you're downloading copyrighted material." But the copyrighted material he's downloading is Linux Ubuntu, which is, of course, free to download. So it appears, best I can figure, that some robot is going along and just sort of spamming out takedown notices. I don't know. There was some discussion over, do you fight this or not? But it's an odd situation when they're telling you that the free stuff you're getting is actually pirated. If a robot tells you you're breaking the law, are you breaking the law? Should you have your own robot write a letter back to this robot? I mean, I say this facetiously, but I don't know if that's actually could be an answer or not. Next up is Florida's Stop Social Media Censorship Act is almost certainly unenforceable. And I love this because this reminds me of Section 230, which is basically the problem here is legislatures think that they can like determine reality through passing laws. And Section 230 famously says it's only about 20, 30 words, but it just sort of says, hey, you can be a publisher and a bulletin board at the same time. And it's magic because we say you can, which is, that's the gist of it. But you can't because those are two historically two different endeavors and they have different rules historically. They work different ways politically and socially. But the legislature thought they could just say it. If we can say it, must be true. And no, not so much. And so Florida is doing the same thing. And in this case, they're going, hey, if you take a politician off of Twitter or Facebook or whatever, we're going to fine you per day that you do that. And I'm actually with the legislature. I mean, guys, my heart's with you because I don't want social media becoming a world government, and I'm under no illusion that Zuckerberg and the like really think they're forming world governments. So there's no doubt in my mind that's what they think they're doing. But you just can't make things go appear and go away by passing laws. It doesn't work that. I remember the one of the first big government jobs I worked at. They said, "Hey, we got this new project. We're going to be done in a year." And I'm like, "Wow, who did the spec?" And they're like, "We haven't started the spec or whatever, but we're going to be done in a year." Then I said, "Well, how do you know you're going to be done when we haven't started?" And I said, "Because the law says we will be done in a year." Like, okay. Of course, they were not done in a year, but what they did, in all fairness, was they just declared victory and moved on, which is the way these things work. So Florida says, "Hey, guys, you can't do this." And we'll see if that holds up. It won't. Next up is the LASSO discovers a dozen new particles at ultra-high energies. These are gamma rays at an energy we've never seen before. Best job in the world is a physics policeman. Because every week there's like, this breaks the laws of physics. So if you were like a physics policeman, you'd be writing tickets all day long. These guys breaking laws. I think Bob and I talked about this about a month ago. I don't have any, insight into particle physics. I keep reading that, hey, we've discovered this entirely new thing, and then nothing happens. It's much akin to the way we're trying to make mice eternally like super powerful and fly around and such. So that's particle physics. Oh, this is cool. So this next one, is why some old computers are interesting. And this is not cool from like back in my day standpoint. This is cool from at one point we had the whole thing in our head, right? So at one point between von Neumann and, I don't know, say 75, 85, 1975, 1985, it was possible to hold all of computation mostly in your head from the metal on up to what you were doing. And as part of that, we eventually made the open architecture complex systems you see today. And looking at these old systems, you get to see how those things evolve, which I think is quite fascinating. How did the memory evolve? How did shared memory evolve? How did time multitasking evolve? This is the story of people making things more and more complex in an effort to create an abstraction layer that works. And in many cases, as we know, they were successful. The open architecture system probably is one of the greatest things we've done in the modern PC. But if it's too much to dive into on the Nerd Roundup, but if you're interested in stuff, dive in here. It's cool stuff. Speaking of things that are too much to dive into on the Nerd Roundup, here we have the Doom Engine code review. This is from 11 years ago, and I thought this was just extremely awesome. And I also admit that I haven't got into it yet. And it's awesome for the same reason I like the other stuff. It's because you get to kind of go see how these things. Doom is the most over-analyzed, redone piece of code ever. And I really wanted to take a look at this. I would be interested in doing a port myself if I had time. Interesting compromises they did with the square root function. Cool stuff. Staying on the subject of complexity and not being able to understand things, I thought this quite interesting. This guy says, we're always saying battery technology is not evolving, but actually it is evolving. And the problem is that we can't get a good grip around it because there's a lot of complexities involved. No, they don't have a Mr. Fusion yet, and that kind of sucks, right? And he does one of the really cool things is there's a lot of really cool graphics here. And the one I found most interesting was this. So here are your spider graph of your top seven different things you're going to look for in a battery. Energy density, easy for me to say. Energy density, specific energy, selling price, cycle life, calendar life, temperature range, and charge time. I think what happens is that researchers will make a little, 5 or 10% progress in one of these seven areas. And the press release will go out and the reporters will report this as, significant increase in rechargeable batteries. But the problem is that there's another six areas they didn't improve on. And in fact, in some cases, they improved maybe 20% in one area and got worse in the other areas. So it's not like a thing you can say, hey, it's actually better or worse step by step. But one of the interesting analogies this guy uses. He has a he bought a new digital single lens reflex camera, and it has the same shaped battery as the one he bought 10 years ago, but the new battery has about 80% more charge to it. So I mean, that's sort of a apples to apples comparison. It's funny, it has about 80% more charge, but it actually lasts less because the new camera uses more power. But you can look at the outside of the battery and see that batteries are making progress. It's just in this sort of complex way that becomes very difficult for us to talk about. And so if you're building something, you actually go into this spider graph and you start tweaking the variables around to figure out exactly what you want your battery to be. Okay. Oh, yeah, so this is another cool thing. This is I've got three of these, which I thought were all related and all kind of neat. This is the Expanse UI design, sticking with the subject of complexity. These are like, how do you make screens that show you orbital dynamics, how to control a spaceship, holographic displays, cool stuff if you like, if you're interested in like, how do I help people understand complex things. It got into an interesting discussion online, I love those little clear things, about how would you write software for fleet of spaceships, because spaceships, of course, would be light minutes or light hours, perhaps even light days away from one another. And you couldn't roll out a patch. Well, you could roll out a patch, but it would take a while to go out to things. And so you'd have to have some coordinated updating, patching, a data transfer system that actually took the speed of light into account. That struck me as like, oh, wow. This is also one in a long line of how they did graphics for X, right? This is 2001, Space Odyssey. Beautiful. Look at some of this font work they've got here. Just gorgeous stuff. I love watching the UI design evolve in movies. And this last one here, I think, is Star Trek. Yeah, Star Trek. And this is the latest Trek. I like watching the UI designs evolve. And one of the reasons why is the early ones didn't have a lot of social pressure on what they should look like. So like now, if you're looking at this new Star Trek design, we've already seen, the Minority Report with the glass thing. We've already seen a lot of this other stuff. And so you can tell that the designers are kind of constrained by where the rest of the designers are going. So they have to write something inside of what's expected. And that, to me, is kind of cool because you don't really know whether it's going to work or not until you actually work it. So what you're really seeing in these movies are things that they think you will think look cool, not things that actually work. One of my favorite points was that if you had one of those Minority Report things with all the glass things that are moving around, your arms would get tired really freaking quick. You could not work that even like an hour, much less all day. But yeah, if you're interested in graphic stuff, here's how they did graphics for Expanse. By the way, Expanse is the most excellent sci-fi series, 2001 and Star Trek. So those are all in the linked list. Cool stuff. All right. So as I understand, this is another programmer. He's like, I'm going to have to learn Rust because everybody else is learning Rust. It's kind of popular because it's popular. And I get that. I mean, I'm not, I wasn't born yesterday. I understand that wherever the herd's going, you have to go. And this is, we're sticking with the complexity herd thing we've been going with. I understand. I grok it. And I want to learn some Rust myself. I know C, so Rust can't be that big a jump. You sort of start wondering if your career, instead of sort of focuses on kind of cool stuff that you can do to help people, and instead focus on cool stuff that other nerds will like because they think it's cool, that you kind of end up in that sort of Minority Report situation where you develop all these things that are really awesome looking but can't actually be used. And I guess it's a good way to make money, but not something I'm interested in. This is a good one, huh? So this is Matthew Iglesias. This is, I think he's a left-leaning columnist. And, this is about how that running with the herd, sort of looking for social validation, can end up really screwing up our knowledge systems. Thank you. And what happened, if you guys haven't followed along, was we had this pandemic situation. A politician said, you know, this thing may have actually originated in a lab overseas. And then because this politician was on one side of the aisle, everybody on the other side just sort of, he's crazy. He's just doing political stuff, and it's all a bunch of bullshit. And don't listen to him because they're... And it here's a guy on the other side who's like, you know, we really screwed this up, fellas. What I liked, it was his point in this. He said, you know, he said, this guy came out and said, hey, maybe it's a originated in a lab. But he did it in a rude way because he made attacks on politicians, and he's not a nice person, and we don't like him. But what happened was his attack, he said, pachinko'd down into being a politics story, where writers and fact-checkers who didn't cover science at all knew that this was a debunked story that right-wingers were pushing from their own nefarious ends. And it's a beautiful sort of one-sentence synopsis of person I don't like says something in a way I don't like. He must be doing it for because he's a bad person. And because he's a bad person, then we don't have to listen to him. This is really bad. It's the total fiasco. My personal opinion on all this, and I was asked by many friends to take a look at COVID. And I did. About every 6 weeks, I did like a video update. I just didn't care about this lab origin thing. I didn't want it to be that way. Did not want it. That did look to me an example of people shutting down people with opinions they didn't like. At the end of the day, kind of what does it matter where it came from? Aside from just we are really sucky at being able to talk about things, you know, that sort of offend us in one way or another. There's no kind of end to this. That's right. That's the point he makes as well. It's like, hey, this okay, fine. Who cares? The bigger point here is that, God, how many other topics are just never, ever going to be addressed because we have decided that these things are just beyond the pale to even discuss. I read recently that YouTube and Facebook have decided that now you can actually talk about this virus origin theory, whereas before, if you talked about it, they would just take you down. It's like, wow. So if the right political people, the correct political people, are angry at what I say and accuse me of just being playing politics and not being serious or whatever accusation they want to make at me. And those things may be true, by the way. Because I'm a political person who's rude and an asshole doesn't mean I'll have a good point. But anyway, if the right people were correct people were upset with me, I am shut down. And I'm not going to say cancel culture, but, you know, gee. And the other weird thing here is we're in a spot right now. This is one of the reasons I love following this story, is that not only can you not talk about certain things, you can't talk about not being able to talk about certain things. Like if you say the phrase cancel culture, well, you must be some kind of like outlying kind of wing nut or something. That's even weirder. We go through these phases where it's like, la, 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 don't want to hear, don't want to hear, don't want to hear. And in watching this group sort of slowly wake up and go, well, maybe this lab thing's true, maybe this other thing's true, is freaking scary as hell, to be honest with it, because I'm not really sure which topics they're going to wake up to and actually sort of go see if it's true or not, and which topics are just going to keep ignoring and they never show up again. This is the way you end up with the Dark Ages, where you have like one priesthood that determines what's right or wrong. This is how you get there. Exactly this. Sorry, I wasn't going to rant. So you might think, well, okay, well, we'll avoid all of this sort of political bantering about, but we'll just go straight to math because math is right or wrong. And this is a really, really cool video. If you have a chance at all, it's a half hour. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's there's a hole at the bottom of math, and it's all about Gödel. I used to call him Gödel, whatever. It's the Gödel's theorem. Gödel's theorem, if you haven't gone through it, is probably one of the most overused theorems in popular culture because it shows that there can be true things in a system that we can never prove and false things we can never disprove. And it's been used from, you know, UFOs, Elvis flies a pyramid, whatever you want to say could be true. then you always say, well, what else has there? Could be Troy. You can't prove it. But he was making a very precise scientific mathematical point. And this is a great video to show you what it is. And not only that, but then he pivots about halfway through from this, like, what are the foundations of math, to how does this apply to computer programming? And I think there were three things that Hilbert wanted. He wanted completeness, decidability, and consistency. And Gödel took away completeness, consistency, and decidability is kind of rare. And so it's really cool because I think you could take this, you could do another half-hour video, and start with where he leaves us with the three topics and go over, well, how, if you're actually running a computer program, you have to have solved the halting problem or your computer program would not halt. So you kind of avoid the problem by recognizing it's a bug. That brings some other issues into play. But if you look at the Curry-Howard correspondence, you can actually start recreating a more pure mathematical system by writing computer programs. And then the middle one about, I think, the decidability is actually has to do with types and type theory, which takes us to our next topic. So many, many times people will say, you know, gee, you can get out of this through type theory. And this guy wrote this huge honking book, which I plan on keeping in my bookmarks. He's got the Curry's Paradox, and he's got a bunch of really cool stuff. Polymorphic references. He goes down through how we've tried to solve these math problems that you just saw in the previous video using type systems. And I believe we've made a lot of progress, but it's not as simple as a yes or no. I think it's as simple as whether your type system's complete or not. And if you're designing a mathematical system, you probably want a complete type system. Whereas if you're writing a computer program, you really only care if the types are complete for the problem you're solving. And this gets into incremental strong typing, some things in my book. But yeah, the thing is it's a different solution if you're trying to do all of math. So the halting problem kill you every time. Types will never ever work out the way you want them to. But if you're only typing and for one problem and you're checking for halting, it works. It's probably good enough. Okay, so that's the uber nerdy part, I think, of the show. Thousands of Chrome extensions are tampering with security headers. And, wow. So, if you have Google Chrome, and you have a Google Chrome extension, and maybe it does all, you know, readability, for instance, there's some other things, it may need to actually hack into the security headers that are coming in to give you the sort of user experience you want that the plugin promises to give you, which is all well and good. But these security researchers are like, well, you know, you just can't just do that because, you know, that's actually that's a breaking of the web system. So the discussion we're actually having here is, should content providers own everything they provide all the way down to your eyeballs? Because if they should, then you don't want them those security headers being ignored in your browser. However, it's part of the spec. It's built in that these browser extensions can't ignore these headers. That's by design, because some people don't want to see, you know, people who are visually impaired. They want to see things a certain way. And so you have to allow the extension to actually disable some security things just to make it usable for people. So it's like these researchers are pointing out that it's a bug. It's a security hole, and really, no, not so much. It's more like a feature. It's a feature, not a bug. Somebody said, you know, if you could do this, if you could take away the security header and at the same time inject JavaScript into a client size, you may be able to do some man-in-the-middle stuff. He's 2485. But you can't, so bless your hearts, guys. I'm glad you did this. Okay, speaking of people telling you things are problems when they're not, so if you make a study that's less likely to be true, you're more likely to have it be cited. And this is about as wackadoodle as I can imagine. Basically, what they're saying is what we all know, is that there's mixed incentives. That what you want to do as a scientist is you want to come up with a theory that's just a little outside the norm enough that you can get a lot of press and get a lot of links without being far enough that you get a lot of doubts or people actually try to reproduce it. Doesn't matter whether it works or not. And I think the saddest thing about this is I've seen a dozen of these problems of science stories. And every time I see them coming into sort of a technical form, there's these stories about people who have had these awful experiences working as postdocs in research labs where the data was faked and the p-hacking, all that stuff. It is very disturbing. I'm not really sure what we can do about that, but it's messed up. But it's not as messed up as this man whose love of cheese actually got him into jail. This man loves Stilton cheese, and so he took a picture of the cheese he loved to buy, posted it on Facebook, but they were able to track his fingerprint from the cheese, and he got arrested because he was a drug dealer. He was tracked down after sharing a photo of the cheese he loved. So, say cheese. Caught by your love of cheese. That's just not right. And see, they were able to identify fingerprints from this piece of cheese. And I don't know how they did that either. Crazy cool stuff. So, I've talked about deepfakes several times. And this is the latest deepfake story. And this is deepfakes are the story that just going to keep on giving and giving. These guys, this is Chinese TV. You've got this picture, these folks in sort of sitting down talking. And then you go down to the new picture, and it's the same people. But as you can see in upper left-hand corner, nothing here. Now they've got a sign. And so what they're doing is they're using AI and deepfake technology, the usual CGI stuff they use in movie effects, and going in and adding ads to scenes. And so you can actually, what the theory is, they want to sell product placements inside of movies that may be like 50 years old. And so the only way I can see out of this is if you like something, download it and keep it. Because otherwise, it's just going to be recycled over and over again where each little person that picks it up tries to make another buck off of it. Here's Steve McQueen and Stalag 13, I think, The Great Escape. You know, do you really want to see him riding like a modern motorcycle? It's just, you go all kinds of places with this. So you could actually have an old movie with a star that just recently passed away stuck into the older movie, then with ads stuck on top of that. And one of the people online said, well, you know what they ought to do is they'll decide which scenes they don't like so that you can go through and do audience response. As I'm talking here, my computer's watching my eyes. That's what your phone and various tablets. So to watch your eyes to see where you're paying attention or not. Many cars do that as well. But you could actually do that with whatever the movie was. So then for scenes people were not paying attention to, you could just sort of rewrite them or delete them on the fly. There's really no limit to what you can get into once you just start hacking into these things. This is a follow-up. I'm not going to go over this too much. This is the Havana Syndrome stuff. This is probably the link will be on the page. This is the best review I've seen of all the evidence. And there's no doubt in my mind something's happening here. I don't know what it is, but yeah, it's crazy. They think that what may be happening would be that the Russians are using some sort of microwave technology to hack into phones. And by doing that, they're just inadvertently frying people's brains while they're doing that. I don't know what Putin needs to do to actually get a war. I know he probably wants one, but this is, I don't know. Yeah, this is messed up. This is a next one for reference only. This is an excerpt from a novel about robotic revolution, and this is all about this robot actually going through a combat house. Very, very cool stuff. But this is a Washington Post article out in the last day or two. And this is a NASA scientist saying, hey guys, why don't you have more NASA scientists looking into this UAP stuff? That makes sense to me. And the interesting thing here was actually NASA scientists are now feeling free to come out and say, well, there's two of me. Hey, I'm up here too. Hey, me. I've grown another head. Hang on, I don't like this version of me. This is a much better me. The interesting thing here is that scientists are feeling welcome to come out and say that there's a problem. That did not happen before. Cool stuff. And then the final link. Wow. Wonder why I just appeared. Yeah, so this is somebody who did an analysis, and they're saying, hey, computer science, we actually have these rings of people who are, you know, validating one another. I ran into this in the technical field once. I was doing some technical coaching, and we were looking for a new technical coach, and I said, well, there's a couple people we may want to consider. And the response, and it was quite honest, was, you know, well, hey, you guys just always tell that each one of you are awesome anyway, so I really can't tell from your opinion whether they're cool or not. And, it, you know, it's not that they were wrong, because that's the way we are. But it just sort of really emphasized to me kind of what problem we have, looking at this as simple as we do. Recently, there was this morning, I read a review of Salman Rushdie's latest book, which is an autobiography. And Rushdie used to do book reviews of his fellow authors. And he's like, you know, I don't do those anymore. And the reason is, if you say the book's really cool, then they just feel like you're just giving them platitudes. It doesn't really matter. They already knew it was cool because they wrote it. And if you say the book sucks, then they're going to hate you for the rest of your life. So he's like, there's just no, it's a mug's game, I think the way he put it. This happens over and over again in every field. Once you sort of build up a culture, then you have to sort of fit into that culture or be shunned. And so, yeah, this is just more evidence happening in computer science. And it's a real shame, because there's the most brilliant people of our generation, the smartest kids, people with the most promise, are in these dead-end kind of cul-de-sacs of mediocrity that they're being stuck in by their peers. And I just, that makes me sad. I do not like that. All right, so there's another two me's. Go to the other me here. So here you go. You've wasted yet another 45 minutes or half hour or so with Nerd Roundup. I'm sorry we didn't have more people this week. Hope to have some more next week. Don't know. Got a bunch of really cool nerd stories, though. And if you get a shot, definitely watch that video, because that was that's probably the best video I've seen on Gödel's theorem and the incompleteness issue. And it goes through how he did the proof, which is neat. I liked it a lot. Most recommended. How did I get to this last one here? Yeah, hey, it's got the right me here. Thanks for coming by. I am Daniel Markham. This is my book if you're interested in it. If not, that's cool too. We'll see you next week. I will see you on the internet.